Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, January 4th, 2021. Have to get used to saying a new year now that we are in that new year, and plenty on the agenda already this week, especially in the U.S. with those Georgia Senate runoff elections. We'll get to that in a moment. But 2020 pretty much finishing off on a high note, to say the least. We can see on slide two, NASDAQ 100. Although things went pretty quiet in the last few trading sessions of the year, and noting technically a little bit of momentum divergence. We've seen those new impulse highs being increasingly weak on the impulse side, so the momentum indicators have gone flat to slightly lower. So we need to see a good fresh start to keep the momentum going in 2021. Otherwise, there may be some risk technically of a correction. Peter, before we get into that, we also need to note the crypto explosion. I wonder if a lot of that happening over the holidays, I wonder if people are getting distracted from their equity portfolios when they're looking over the crypto space. Do you think there's any interaction between those two things? There has to be at some level.
That's actually a very interesting question. I hadn't thought about that. So you'll get my quick back on the envelope comment to that. I think we know that there's a lot of retail investors and new investors that are driving the market. I would be very... I think it's pretty clear that they're looking at both markets. I think Bitcoin is very much a dominant theme among this new class of investors. So, yeah, I think so. And right now the price action is in Bitcoin. That's where the momentum is, and the stories popping up everywhere about people, you know, being debt free because of investments in Bitcoin and what have you. It will drive a lot of attention and further excitement for this space. But having said that, we're still up on the first day of trading here in equity markets, and I think the market is increasingly positioning itself on a potential positive surprise. Not positive in the sense that I'm not talking about politics here, but positive surprise on the Georgia runoffs. Not that I care about the politics of it, but that's just that if the Democrats get, you know, the two seats, it's a tie with Kamala Harris, the vice president-elect, being the kicker. Creating a majority in the US Congress for the Democrats, and that could potentially be a massive repricing in equities driven by, you know, reflation trade. So that's definitely one to watch, and that runoff, John, I think you're the one that is the expert here on US elections. It's tomorrow, right?
It is tomorrow. We'll probably get the results over the course of Wednesday, and with all the usual protestations, if the vote count, especially, I would imagine, doesn't go for the Republicans. And I wonder if also the polls supposedly showing a tilt in favor of the Democrats. With all the caution we have in trusting in these polls, as we saw how bad they were and how off they were in the 2020 election in many cases, but be very interesting. And it really does change the game, because although there are a couple of marginal senators in the Senate who are not in favor of the all guns blazing climate platform and otherwise, especially one West Virginia senator named Joe Manchin, who comes from the most pro-Trump state just about in the union, it does change at the margin the ability to get certain types of legislation passed, and especially the fiscal stimulus and stimulus checks and things like that could be far larger than otherwise would be the case. So yeah, there's a lot at stake. And I wonder as well if this latest plan by some senators and the majority of House Republicans to protest the certification of Biden's victory plays at the margin to the sort of marginal voter in the suburbs. And they're like, oh, I don't really like this kind of a behavior. And maybe they don't get out to vote relative to the more enthusiastic Trump base. And as well, this embarrassing, by all accounts, Trump recording where he's asking somebody to gin up as many votes as can be found in Georgia. It's not presidential, but then again, when has that stopped his voters? So it's very interesting, and it does change the calculus, and it's very important, and presumably weaker for the dollar. The key question, as we've always had, is whether this means that the U.S. long yields are unleashed and go higher, and that really, I think, starts to change the ball game at some point, and timber at some point as well, the degree to which we could just continue to go up across the board. With that long spiel said, I didn't mean to put you on the spot on the Bitcoin question, but I was just sort of idly speculating myself over the weekend. It's funny how these huge explosions are happening when the markets were closed. So it feels like people were sitting at home frustrated and wanted to speculate on something when they couldn't do so in the actual financial markets. Ethereum up by some 40% since yesterday, one day, over $1,000 now. You see on slide three, and even up in that little period against this crazy surge in Bitcoin. And you can see on the following, on slide four, that this last leg has sort of accelerated beyond the regression line that was established over the prior 2 months, when basically you saw a doubling of the price, and more than a doubling of price in the space of just 2 months, and they're accelerating beyond that. So it's just, you know, this is not to say it can't continue. It's just pointing out that it's becoming almost super exponential, and that often means these things become highly unstable, and it also could mean that the corrections could be very vicious. But switching gears a little bit, Ola, we have the commodity markets off to a roaring start here in 2021, all looking, you know, post the current very dark cloud of COVID hanging over everything, apparently. I'm seeing Brent here at almost $53 this morning, and gold well north of $1,900. Is it just an acceleration in the themes you've been talking about, I guess, at the end of last year?
Well, it's definitely a continuation, and at this kind of pace, it is also an acceleration, John, absolutely. If we take a look at slide 10, two of the things that we'll be focusing on here as 21 kicks off. We mention them on a regular basis, but one is the so-called roll yield. How much does it cost, or how much does it, what is the carry or the cost by being long commodities? And that has been a drag. Being long commodities has been a drag for the past 5-6 years up until now. That has changed during the past 3 to 4 months. Basically now you're seeing you can actually have a positive roll yield by being long the commodity space, and that is I think a major change in the outlook, and one that will continue to drive passive investment, long investments into the space. So what are the drivers? Well, we are seeing emerging tightness in key commodities. That's obviously a key point. We're seeing that in some of the industrial metals. We're also seeing in some of the food commodities. We're not seeing it yet in oil markets. That probably is not going to be a story for another year or two, but that potentially could also become a problem due to the lack of investments currently going into the sector. We got the vaccine-led recovery, as you mentioned, leading to expectation for a pickup in demand. We got the dollar, which is also playing ball. It's weakening, and that's supporting commodities in general. The green transformation adding increased demand for likes of copper and silver, and then the whole reflation trade. And especially if we do see a Georgia switch to the Democrats, then that reflation trade will be back on the agenda across the board, I would say. And that these are all just driving these expectations. And expectations are already elevated. You can see that also on slide 10 here with the speculative long held by speculators, hedge funds, and what have you. It reached the highest level since early 2017. Last month, obviously, we still got the latest batch coming tonight, which basically highlights where commodities were, what position they held at the end of the year. But they're looking for additional gains across all three sectors, as you can see on the split up between energy, metals, and agriculture. And just to finish off that segment, as you mentioned, Brent crude at a 10-month high. We're just traveling along that uptrend since the first quarter, and gold at the same time broke. Wasn't really a down. Well, it was a downtrend, but it wasn't really confirmed by that line. That line is slightly silly. You could argue that we hit it three times, but nevertheless, you can see that we are breaking high above 1900 with 1965 potentially the next target. So it's a roaring start, and a sector I think we need to focus on, need to keep a very close eye on this year.
Yeah, because that's also because you know, we saw this episode recently of the stimulus checks in the U.S. $600 that Trump wanted to push higher to $2,000. And, you know, supposedly, I can't remember the number, 78% of people in favor of that. Yeah, but we all would like some free money, right? And that just shows the degree to which that kind of thinking has taken over. And the only thing that's going to temper that kind of thinking will be when people realize that the price of bread, for example, has gone from $4 to $5, and that all the stimulus money is not buying any more stuff. And I think it'll be interesting to see how that process starts to play out as the year-on-year comparisons start to base in March and April, and we start to see whether signs of inflation and key things like shipping prices and apparently in some of the industrial goods out there, if that starts to feed through and how that affects the whole mix here. But interesting stuff. Okay, let's switch gears a little bit again. Peter, we talked in one of our final podcasts before the rollover into 2021 about sort of where the leading edge of a lot of this speculative energy is in a lot of these in some cases non-revenue stocks, disruptors, Tesla being one of those, and specifically this ARK ETF, which is an investor in so-called disruptive innovators. And it's been kind of interesting to see over the last, let's call it week, 2 weeks, how their share price or the ETF price has sort of rolled over relative to a market that continues to broadly run higher. And then you had an interesting brief spiel in our internal morning meeting about you think this is where we need to look first for if we are going to see a sizable correction this year, which I think is your premise, that maybe it's this area that we need to focus on, some of these innovators and these extremely highly evaluated companies.
Yeah. So just to put on a little bit more color. So when I say a meaningful correction, I think we'll definitely get a correction on equities because we're priced for perfection. Which I can talk about a little bit on slide six in 1 minute's time. But coming back to the ARK story, I think the sizable correction we will get is in technology stocks and the ones that you mentioned with very little revenue and very high expectation. I think ARK Invest ETF, which we have on slide seven, it's the poster child of the current speculative game we have in the equity town. Extraordinary run up, as you can see from the lows back in March. ARK Invest definitely, I mean, kudos to what they have done. I think over the past 10 years, it's a phenomenal story of a new asset management firm that is taking a much different view on the equity market and it looks for disruptive technologies. And they have done very well, and their success is now becoming a problem for them because the inflow into the fund has just exploded higher this year, and it's causing them to actually have a meaningful price impact on the underlying securities, Tesla being one, I think, the biggest positions in this specific ETF. And as you mentioned, it has come down in the last couple of trading sessions. So I just say that my point is that I think when we get the next correction, I think the Tesla stock and the ARK Invest ETF will be the epicenter of the holdings that will be hit the most. So it's definitely, I think, your shortlist for any ideas on the downside. And talking about Tesla on slide eight, just quickly doing that, they hit the 2020 target on deliveries and production, was basically in line, 500,000 as they said they would do. They also set 3 days ago a very aggressive Model Y price target in China on their China-produced car, which was below the competitor's price tag. So that's obviously bolstering growth expectations for their Chinese market. But the most important market is Europe, and their competition is heating up aggressively. So I think it will be a watershed moment or a year for Tesla in 2021. And as you can see, that small insert I've put in on slide eight here, the consensus rating right now is a 12-month price target of 424, which is 40% below the last price, the last closing price. So analysts cannot really do the calculations to justify the current price. Tesla has now hit a $669 billion market cap. So I think it will be a super interesting year for Tesla. And John, just, you know, staying with the equity themes and the valuations, just quickly want to touch on slide six, as I mentioned. If you're looking at the trailing or the rolling valuations over the past 12 months, I never thought I would see it, but we have. And I know it's a little bit like a rear mirror image, but we've hit the highest levels in the MSCI World Index ever, because we've eclipsed the dot-com level. So we're almost two standard deviations above the average in equities. So as you can see as well on slide six here, we're on the chart to the right, we're in the red area here. So we're basically in a territory we've never seen before. So it will be super interesting to see where we hit on a real rate return. And talking about real rate return, that's all about the inflation. And I just want to highlight on slide five, you can see that New York Fed weekly activity index, you can see there, we really continue the economic rebound there. We're getting very close to zero growth in the economy compared to a year ago. and the inflation gauge as well from the New York Fed that measures a lot of prices, not only physical prices, but also online prices, have definitely turned a corner and is moving higher. So I think this is the key story to watch because it impacts the interest rates and the ultimately equity valuations.
Key points there. And on the FX front, a part of that story has to be a weaker dollar. We are largely seeing a weaker dollar. It put up a little bit of a fight into year end, but it's rolling back over again and pretty much in sync with what we're talking about here today, rising commodity prices, reflation expectations, as well. I think the shifting odds on the Georgia Senate races is moving things. But as well, I think one of the bigger moves worth noting overnight or on the first session of the year is this Chinese renminbi, which is up a full percent and one of the bigger moves in recent history. And that pair, I'm a bit surprised to see them allowing a move of that magnitude all in one go. So we'll keep an eye on that and whether that is simply reflecting dollar weakness or whether the renminbi is starting to lead again. And then very briefly on sterling, we finally got a little bit more enthusiasm for the Brexit deal. I'm putting in a decent rally, of course, versus the dollar, but a lot of that's certainly dollar weakness, but against the euro. And so we're seeing euro sterling, you can see on slide nine, pushing lower again. 88.50 to 88.60 area is the next big one where we're looking for something a bit more interesting and sort of isolated sterling strength. It's still not much of a reaction. And it's very interesting to see if traders can continue to look through what is an absolutely terrible situation on the ground with COVID in the UK because of the more contagious variant. And they are ahead of the game in terms of rolling out that vaccine, but there's a lot more work to be done on that front. They just approved the third vaccine, the AstraZeneca Oxford one, which is perhaps going to be available in larger numbers and or numbers of doses and is a lot cheaper. So it'd be interesting to see if they can logistic-wise roll out that vaccine and what timetable that happens on as the sort of leading edge of a country that's trying to get ahead of COVID in a race on the vaccine front with this new variant. Also, actually, COVID just briefly affecting sentiment in Japan overnight. We had a pretty weak session in Japan with a very sharp correction as there are fears of an emergency shutdown of Tokyo because of COVID outbreaks there. So we're certainly not on the other side of COVID, but it seems like the market doesn't really care and is happy to speculate in the meantime until we get there. Calendar this week, we have lots of busy points on our calendar slide for today. I don't think any of those are major market movers. Mostly final PMIs. But as we work through the week, tomorrow already is the big event risk of the week, and that is the Senate runoff elections, two of them in Georgia. Again, if both of those go to Democrats, we have a Senate that is controlled at the very, very margin by Democrats, with Vice President Kamala Harris able to cast the deciding vote. The next day, we have FOMC minutes and all through the week, the ISMs out of the U.S. together with the employment report on Friday. But it really is that Senate runoff election that will be in focus. And then the first days of the Biden presidency once we get there in just over 2 weeks' time. So we're off to an interesting start for 2021. We look forward to bringing you more content every day with the Saxo Market Call, Saxo Market Call podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or things you'd like us to discuss, you're welcome to get in contact with us. MarketCall@saxobank.com. That's MarketCall@saxobank.com. It's on the first slide of our slide deck, which is the link of which is available with every podcast posting. For today, thanks for joining, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.